This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Hello, welcome along to a special podcast. It's not Friday, I'm not Simon Mayo, but he is still Mark Kermode. He's in Cannes, and we spoke to him on day 5 of this year's Cannes Film Festival. So far this weekend, they've seen the new Mike Lee movie, the Ken Loach Iraq War movie's been screening, and there was a premiere for Oliver Stone's new Wall Street movie, which you may have seen all the pictures for and the flashbulbs going aplenty. Mark Kermode is in Cannes for us. Hello, Mark.
Hi. The Ken Loach isn't played yet. Ken Loach is coming. It's a late addition to the festival. Interestingly enough, it was pulled in after the original programme had been put together. We're seeing that now on Wednesday morning. It's really interesting. Every now and then this happens. A film gets finished late in the day and the selection committee are excited by it, so they kind of jam it in at the last minute. So it's not in the nice, glossily printed programme, but there's an awful lot of buzz about it, an awful lot of expectation for it as well.
So when's the Palme d'Or awarded, and how far through are we?
Well, we'll find that out on Sunday, so we've still got quite a long way to go. I mean, I would say that of the stuff that we've seen so far, the two biggest contenders would be the Mike Lee film, which played yesterday, and many people are regarding as his best work since Secrets and Lies. I think it's very good.
What's it called?
It's called Another Year, and which, funnily enough, I remember when it was announced as Another Year, it sounded like, you know, Another Year, another Mike Lee movie. It sounded like a very downbeat title, but it has at the centre of it a really kind of positive and warm relationship, and I liked it very much. I mean, Mike Lee has obviously won, you know, at Cannes before, and Secrets and Lies is the thing that he's most celebrated for. Then this morning, there was the press screening of the Alejandro González Iñárritu movie, which is called Beautiful, spelt B-I-U, so misspelt Beautiful. And there was a lot of expectation for that. He's the guy who made Amores Perros and then made Babel. And a lot of people were really fond of Babel. I have to say, I didn't like it at all. I thought it was fairly meretricious. But saw Beautiful this morning. I don't think it's going to be a Palme d'Or winner, but I do think that Javier Bardem, who's the lead actor in it, has got a very, very good chance of winning Best Actor. He's just an astonishing performance. It's one of those films that begins with somebody being given a diagnosis of terminal cancer. That's the beginning of the film. It is a film which, shall we say, goes from one event of extreme misery to the next, and yet in a
is
way...
Is it like listening to a Smiths album?
No, it has fewer jokes than a Smiths album, and it's longer as well. I noticed incidentally that when you came to me, you didn't ask me what I was wearing in the 1980s, and I was going
you still
to take
are.
Offence... No, I know. Well, thank you. Thank you for finishing that joke for me.
You can describe it. Feel free. Is that what you're going to do? Were you just going to
no,
say...
No, I dressed exactly as I dress
yeah.
now. I
was didn't the quiff the whole... still a bigger player?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it was. I mean, I never did the whole kilt and, you know, tea towel over the shoulder and all that nonsense. I
bit more of a two-tone suit boy.
No, I had a Harrington and a pair of Levi's and a quiff. That was what I wore then and now, and I hope on into the future.
And could you be seen dancing in clubs?
No.
No.
Oh, no. Because anyway, New Romantic dancing wasn't dancing, was it? It involved standing still on one foot whilst waving the other arm around in a sort of theatrical fashion. It was all to do with looking like you were doing a performance in 1930s Germany rather than actually dancing.
Your reminiscences through to us, 85058 this afternoon, phil@bbc.co.uk. Mark Kermode's in Cannes for us, where it's day 5 of the Cannes Film Festival. Would you describe this then, Mark, as more of an art house year rather than a blockbuster year? Aside from Wall Street 2, have we seen any big blockbuster stars flying to promote their latest summer blockbuster?
The thing with Cannes is there's always a combination of the two things. On the one hand, you have the films in competition, which is usually a sort of smorgasbord of international cinema, which is what you have got this year. At the same time, what they have is kind of imposed upon that, playing out of competition, you have big Hollywood blockbusters. So as you probably know, the Cannes Film Festival kicked off this year with this great big red carpet premiere of Robin Hood. And I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about Robin Hood. The main discussion on the Croisette, and I'm sure all around the world, has been what accent is Russell Crowe doing? And I was talking to Simon Mayo on Friday, we had Mark Lawson come on the programme because, of course, he had the temerity to ask Russell Crowe what accent he thought he was doing, and Russell Crowe didn't react entirely well to that question. Then, of course,
there's no doubt, though, it is dodgy, isn't it? I saw it on Wednesday.
Oh, it's incredibly
dodgy. It flits between about 8 different regions.
It's mad. I mean, sometimes he is, you know, he's doing a little bit of Australia. Sometimes it's a bit Irish. Sometimes it goes a little bit Welsh. And then every now and then he says, by Ecky Thump, by Ecky's Light. You know, to sort of imply that actually he knows where it is. As I said, what's most peculiar about it is there is scenes in that movie in which he's on screen with Max von Sydow, who is Swedish, but does a better English accent than he does. And then, of course, we had Wall Street 2, Money Never Sleeps, which there was quite a lot of expectation about. I mean,
because this got pulled back, didn't it, Mark?
Well, but the whole thing with Wall Street 2 was, you know, whether it was ever going to happen in the first place, and, you know, whether the time was right for it. Because the theory was, okay, the movie in 1987, I think 86, 87, when the first one came out, was so much of its time. It was the movie that was, you know, that really, you know, gelled all those sort of strange ideas around. And there's that famous, you know, greed is good speech. And, you know, whether or not going back to that was ever going to be a good idea. I mean, as you probably know, the thesis of the movie is that Gordon Gekko's been in prison for 8 years. He comes out of prison and he writes a book called Is Greed Good? And it's basically Oliver Stone revisiting those themes. But it feels very much like a revisitation. And many people are saying, well, this is the ideal time because we've had the financial crisis and the financial crash. And obviously, it's more relevant now. I have to say, my feeling is that it wasn't more relevant. It does suffer somewhat as well from starring Shia LaBeouf. Buff, who I don't know whether you're a fan of his, but I just find him staggeringly uncharismatic. I mean, every moment that Michael Douglas is on screen, that's fine, but the general feeling here was that it was a bit fluffy.
Just remind people what he's been in, what they've seen him in. There was a bit Terminator.
Shia LaBeouf.
The Transformers, wasn't it? And
Transformers. But the thing he was probably best known for was he was in the recent Indiana Jones movie. Yeah. He was the young-ish kid in the Indiana Jones. I mean, Carey Mulligan is in Wall Street too. You know, the star of An Education, who of course is a great British rising star at the moment. So, you know, it has star power, and it has, as I said, at the heart of it has Michael Sheen. But it is a bit of fluff. And so you've got all that stuff going on. And then, meanwhile, you've got the other international movies, which are really, I suppose, what the Cannes Festival is about. I mean, this is the kind of place that the Mike Leigh movie is going to get recognized. This is the kind of place that Iñárritu's movies are going to get noticed. The kind of place that Takeshi Kitano's movies are going to get their warmest audiences. I have to tell you, the strangest thing I've seen since I've been here is a European horror movie called Rubber. Do you ever see that horror movie Christine about a possessed car?
No.
Yeah, you know, based on a Stephen King story.
Oh, yeah, that one, but I haven't seen it. Christine. I know of it. I haven't seen
it. Okay, you know the theory in that. You know, it's a great big cherry red convertible and it's possessed, right? Mm. Well, Rubber is like a low-budget version of that, and it's a possessed car tyre. That's it. It's a killer car tyre that roams around the desert killing people by making their heads explode, and that's it. And that, funnily enough, is fast becoming the kind of the cult item of the festival. The question is, did you get into the screening of Rubber, the movie about the killer car tyre?
Is it one of those, it's so bad it's good?
No, I'll tell you what it is. If it was 30 minutes long, it would be a really good short film. At 90 minutes, it's overstretched, but it was enjoyable and it was good fun. And it is nice because if you sit through something like, for example, this morning, sitting through Beautiful, which is this, you know, incredibly weighty and very portentous and frankly, you know, often very hard going, you know, movie about death and, you know, tragedy in the offer. It is quite fun to see a killer car tie.
You know, I have to ask you, in all the years I've known you, I've never asked you this question. And as a film critic, when you see so many of these, and sometimes you can see three a day, can't you? That's not uncommon.
No, you do five a day.
Yeah. Does it ever detract from the enjoyment of actually watching a film? You know, when people take up sport, sometimes they say, well, I don't play golf now because I'm a professional golfer. Is it the same for you as a critic?
No, I mean, I'm sure if I made films, it might be completely different. Of course, I mean, the great irony here is, you know, you do meet a filmmaker. I mean, I interviewed Mike Leigh, and I bumped into Fernando Treba, who I like very much. He's a filmmaker who made a film called Mad Monkey years ago. He's been working on an animated film in the Isle of Man, interestingly enough. And filmmakers often say that they don't get to see films, and when they do watch films, they can't watch them because all they can see is they can see the camera movement, they can see the actor that they didn't get such a good performance out of, they can see the editor that they want to work with. But I'm a film critic as opposed to a filmmaker. So no, I mean, watching movies has never, ever, ever bored me, and I could spend my whole life in the cinema. And in fact, as far as the Cannes Festival is concerned, the being in the screenings bit is great. It's everything else around it that's hard. It's the scrum getting into the screens. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you're in Cannes. Have you gone to any glamorous parties? I don't do glamorous parties. I don't understand how they work.
You should explain how the screenings work, because I did Cannes 1 year, and it is a proper bun fight. Explain the process about going and just physically getting into a movie.
Well, basically what happens is there's a card system, okay? When you apply to get your can passed, there's various different colours. There's yellow, which is forget it. There's blue, which is queue for an hour and a half, you might get in. There's pink, which is yes, you'll probably get in. There's pink pastille, which is you pretty certainly get in. And then there's white, which is yeah, how can we help you?
Right.
And I have ascended after doing 6 years on a blue pass to pink pastille. And the theory with that is that you ought to be able to turn up 3/4 of an hour before the film and get a seat. However, of course, it doesn't always work like that because often the scrum outside, and it's like a football crowd scrum, is disorganised to the point that it's not possible to do any cards. So, for example, they had the Woody Allen film played here a couple of days ago, which was kind of okay, felt like more of the same to me. But for some reason, the card system broke down, and it was a ruck. And it's, you know, and it was literally like normally civilised, well-behaved people scrapping with each other to get in to watch a Woody Allen movie. I was here the year that Kids played, and that the assembled masses broke the door down of the screening room that was showing Larry Clark's Kids to get in. One very, very well-respected English film critic, not me, had the shirt ripped off his back by people scrabbling to get in. I mean, it's a strange... You do all that, and then you sit down and you watch some piece of, you know, extraordinary art from the other side of the world. Yeah. I mean, as you know, Phil, if you were here for the screenings, outside the screening room, it's a bun fight.
Yeah. And also, it struck me a lot of the parties up and down La Croisette are far from parties. There's actually people on the scrounge for money so they can make a film.
Well, there's an awful lot of what you do is it's shop fronting, that basically you put on a lavish display in order to attract investors. The place that mainly happens now is on the waterfront where the yachts are. If you walk up and down the waterfront, which is right, there's a great big bunker, the Palais, which is basically where the festival happens. Right next to it is this marina, and there are yachts with film companies, and the film companies will hire the yacht for the 2 weeks that the Cannes Festival is on, and they will offer hospitality on their yacht. But actually what they're doing is they're trying to attract investment for their films. That's where an awful lot of the deals get done. One of the main themes of the festival this year has been the question of whether the deals are happening, because obviously in the wake of the financial crisis, the general feeling has been that less deals are happening. But I tell you, I walked up and down the marina, and there are still massive, massive yachts with, you know, people appearing to be doing deals. So, you know, there may be a shortage of money, but there is still money out there.
Tell us about the Andy Serkis interview then that you've done for your movie blog.
Oh, well, I met Andy Serkis, which was very nice. Andy Serkis came out here partly because they're showing 6 minutes of Burke and Hare, which is his new film. I don't ever do those things. I don't go and see unfinished versions of films. I don't like seeing 6 minutes of something. I'll wait until the film's finished. But he's also out here because he's talking up with this thing called the Imaginarium, which is a motion capture, performance capture studio that he's setting up in England, in the UK, in order to do performance capture for British movies. So that, I mean, he's a perfect example. He's over here. He hasn't actually got a movie in the Cannes Film Festival, though he's got a producer credit on one of the movies that's playing here. But actually what he's here to do is to publicise Imaginarium and to, you know, wave the flag a little bit for Burke and Hare. So in a way, what he's doing is, you know, is pretty much the touchstone of what an awful lot of people come to Cannes for. People think of Cannes as being the Cannes Film Festival where you see all these completed movies, but there's so much else going on. And of course, there's this whole other ring of screenings, which is called the marché, the market. And that's where movies are sold, where movie deals are done. That's often where, you know, something that's not going to be out in the cinemas for a year or so is shown in a rough cut to distributors. Those screenings are really brutal. I was in a market screening of the William Friedkin movie Bug a couple of years ago, and there was a bunch of Japanese investors in there, and literally they were on their phones to their bosses, you know, whilst the film was playing, saying, yeah, yeah, violence, yeah, they've got that, yeah, yeah, oh yeah, there's that actor in it, yeah, oh, there's a car crash, yeah, fine, bye, right, in 15 minutes they'd be out. It was the strange thing. I mean, honestly, you think movie criticism is brutal, you should see movie buying in action.
How do people get hold of this blog you've done then? Where is it?
Oh, bbc.co.uk/Mark Kermode. I've been blogging every day from Cannes to this. I'm on day 5 at the moment, and so I've just been, you know, putting a video blog about what I've seen, what I've been doing, and there's something with Andy Serkis. I've done a little interview with Fernando Treba just now about this animated film that he's made. I did film an interview with James King as well, although after we'd finished the interview, we realised that James's microphone wasn't turned on. James thinks we did it on purpose.
Yeah, nothing like a bit of paranoia amongst fellow critics.
No, exactly, yeah.
Mark Kermode fighting his way down La Croisette in Cannes. This was a special extra bonus podcast for you. Mark and Simon Mayer will be back with the film podcast this Friday.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.